Okay, so it's Nsinga Dave's appearance day.
It is.
May 16th, 2011, in Volcano, Hawaii.
Are you broadcasting live?
No. It's not live. It's recorded.
Oh, yeah, you have the address.
I have to say the address.
Why don't you...
Namaste
Narasingaya.
Namaste Narasingaya.
As the verse Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, one who saw deity of Lord Nsingadeva. Offering obeisances to Nsingadeva, whose eyes are wandering like bumblebees around the lotus of the face of Lakshmadeva. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvasesa Sanyarani Paskachade Satarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagraja Tam Sahagna Paganatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitamadevam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
So I want to just very, very briefly run through the story, which we told the story already to the kids this morning, but very briefly, and then we're going to focus on one verse. So I really had a hard time deciding which verse, because other than the stories of Krishna Lila, this is the longest section in the Bhagavatam. Section on Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad Maharaj, and Nsingadeva. So we'll go very quickly. The story starts, well, we could start all the way back with the four Kumaras trying to get into Vaikuntha, being refuse entry by Jayan Vijay and cursing Jayan Vijay to come to the material world, at which point they become the twin sons of Diti. And Hiranyaka, which means golden eyes, he was terrorizing the universe, and he particularly was looking for Vishnu to try to kill him. So he sought out Vishnu, and he was told that Vishnu was appearing in the form of a boar. So he picked a fight with the Lord, and Lord Varaha killed him. Then Hiranyakashipu, of course, he didn't blame Hiranyaka for this. Thank you. Oh my, it's a lot of water. He very conveniently blamed Lord Varaha. Just like Jarasandhar was angry at Krishna for killing Kamsa, but he wasn't mad at Kamsa for killing all of his nephews. You know, very, very selective. So Hiranyakashipu was so angry that Vishnu, in the form of Varaha, had killed his brother, that he swore vengeance. So you find people do this, you know, someone's done something and it goes on, and sometimes one person, and then another person, and then another person, and then another person. As Gandhi said, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. And you see that sometimes there's these wars of vengeance that go on one after another in the family. But it's very interesting that when Hiranyakashipu was pacifying his dead relatives, Hiranyaka's wife, Diti herself, Hiranyaka's children, he said, don't worry, you're not this body. So the demons also understand, not modern demons, but, you know, Vedic demons, and some modern demons, that were not this body. But they worship. Sataputu was doing some research and found out that there are demons in the modern age who preach impersonalism. They preach that the goal of religion is to merge into the Brahman. So they teach we're not this body, we're a soul, we have reincarnation, there's good karma, there's bad karma, but the goal is to merge into the Brahman. And Hiranyakashipu told the story of how Yamaraj pacifies the queens of a dead king who didn't want his body to be burned, and how the little Kalinga bird, it was so absorbed in lamenting the death of his wife that he didn't see that death was coming for him also. So Hiranyakashipu pacified his relatives like that, and then he decided, okay, I am going to get Vishnu. And he started causing havoc on the earth planet. He called out his soldiers and had them, especially they destroyed trees, cows, and brahmanas. They wanted to make sure there was nothing for sacrifice, nothing for Lord Vishnu. And then Hiranyakashipu said, you know, I really, really got to get Vishnu himself. I've got to be the most powerful person in the universe. So he goes and performs austerities with the idea that he would become basically God. And Lord Brahma comes, because Hiranyakashipu was such an incredible yogi that he could keep his life air circulating among his bones. And Lord Brahma came, and he immediately revives his body. And he said, oh, you who are about to die, you for whom death is certain, what would you like? So Hiranyakashipu says, I want to be the top. Let's see if we can find what he said here. He says, you want to be the most powerful person in the universe. He wants all the mystic powers. He wants to be the lord of everyone in the universe, including the demigods. And he wanted everyone to respect him. And he thought, well, Brahma said I have to die, but I'll see if I can trick him. So then he asked, I not want to be killed. What were the benedictions he asked for?
Day and night.
Day and night?
Inside,
outside?
Sky and earth.
Sky and land, earth, sky and land?
No weapon.
No weapon.
Living in all
by any being that Brahma created.
Yes, not killed.
Or has not created.
Yes, any being
created.
any created being, whether created by Brahma or other or otherwise.
All mystic perfections.
All mystic perfections. No man or animal. Nothing living or unliving.
Nothing living or unliving.
Not inside or outside.
Not in the sky or the land.
The sky and land. So he figured he had covered it. So then he went to war. Then he declared war against the universe, and he conquered all of the planets. And there was only three personalities who were not his obedient servants.
Shiva, Brahma, and
Narada.
No, Narada was also superficial.
Narada had to bow down.
Everyone else had to bow down, and he said, no more worship of Krishna, no more worship of Vishnu, that's not allowed. Everybody has to worship me. And one interesting thing we were discussing this morning is that Hiranyakashipu forced the plants to bear fruit in all seasons. And he forced them to bear in all seasons without any agricultural endeavor. So we find this is happening today with the modern demons, that the modern demons try to force the plants to bear when they normally wouldn't. And of course, they're especially doing this with the animals. You know, they're trying to force the cows to constantly give milk. They're trying to force the chickens to constantly give eggs. They fatten the animals with hormones so that they get fat in one third of the time and they can't even stand on their legs and things like that. So this was the sort of thing that Hiranyakashipu was doing, where he was trying to force nature to overproduce. You know, it's kind of, that's what you do with a slave. You know, with a slave, you just whip them till they keel over dead. You know, you just keep working them and working them and working them until they die. So that was what he was doing with nature. Now, it was very interesting that although Hiranyakashipu had all this, there was two things described in the Bhagavatam he was doing. One is that he was... One is that he was always drunk. One is that he was always drunk, and the other was that he was always yelling at the demigods for no reason. So, these...
They should have laughed at me for no reason.
Did he? That must have been awful. So if you're yelling at people for no reason, and you're always taking intoxication, this must mean that you're not very...
Happy.
You're not very happy. That's not the behavior of a happy person, right? That's how you can tell somebody's really in a bad mood, if they're snapping at people for no reason. So it was interesting that although he had control over the universe, he had control over nature, he had control over all the demigods, he had everything that he wanted, he was still not happy. Now he had four sons. One of them was
what?
He was still not happy. Why?
I'll read it for you.
Oh, good.
And yet, in spite of having achieved the power to control all directions and enjoy sense gratification as much as possible, Hiranyakashipu was dissatisfied. The reason for this was that instead of controlling his senses, Hiranyakashipu remained their servant.
Whoa. Now, later in the Bhagavatam, Vamandev is going to say the same thing to Bali. Vamandev comes to Bali and says, I want three steps of land. And Bali says, well, I own the universe. Why don't you ask for a planet? He said, you should ask for something so great that you'll never have to ask for anything else from anyone else ever. And Vamandev says, no, you don't understand. He says, if you own all of the planets and you can't control your senses, you won't be happy. He said, if I can't be happy with what I need, I'll never be happy. So this was Hiranyakashipu's problem. Okay, now he has four sons. One of them is Prahlad. And when he's old enough to... Actually, when he was a little baby, he was already exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy. So he would see Krishna coming towards him, he'd laugh, and he'd see Krishna going away, and he'd cry, and he wouldn't play with ordinary baby toys. But somehow or other, his parents didn't figure this out, what was going on with this very odd child that they had. So he goes to school, and when he comes home, his father says, what's the best thing that you've learned? And Prahlad Mara said, give up all your material attachment and go to Vrindavan. And Hiranyakashipu says, okay, this is not very good. Some enemy has been talking to him. So, you know, just like if you were some Palestinian terrorist and your kids start saying, you know, you should really, like, make friends with the Israelis. So you think that some kind of enemy had come into your camp. So it was something like that. Because that's how Hiranyakashipu saw the world. He saw the world in terms of friends and enemies. And to him, Vishnu was simply his enemy. So then the teacher said to Prahlad, how'd you know about this? And he wouldn't tell them. He would simply say, how foolish you are talking about friends and enemies. So after a while, Hiranyakashipu thought, okay, my kid's properly educated. And again, Prahlad is talking to him, and he says, tell me what the best thing is you've learned from your guru. Now he's thinking, your guru is Sandanamarka, and Prahlad is thinking, my guru is Narada. So he says, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. He lists the nine process. He said, you should always hear about Vishnu. You should always talk about Vishnu. You should always remember Vishnu. You should serve Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. You should fully surrender to Vishnu. So, you know, again, it's like asking Hitler, please surrender to the Allies. And Hiranyakashipu, at that point, he becomes furious. And he tells Sandanamarka, what are you teaching him? He said, we haven't done this. So at this point, Well, then he asked Prahlad, I said, where did you learn these things? And Prahlad said, there's no way you could learn these things. If you're too attached to your senses, you can't learn these things from someone else or by yourself or by any endeavor. So don't worry, you're not going to have to learn any of these things. So then Hiranyakashipu decides that it's time to kill his own child. So, of course, in the modern day, we talk about some parents who torture or kill their children, and it gets in the newspapers, and we have social services and our child protection organization. So Hiranyakashipu is the Adi child abuser. And he tries to have the boy's body pierced, and nothing happens to Prahlad. And at that point, Hiranyakashipu gets very scared because, you know, he's the most powerful, but he doesn't exactly expect his son to be the most powerful. It's like, well, what's this kid? I can't destroy him. Why isn't he being killed? The weapons of the demons wouldn't even make a scratch in him. So they did a number of things. Let's see what he did. He put him under elephant's feet, threw him off a mountain, starved him, poisoned him, put him in cold places with strong winds, burned him, drowned him, threw huge stones at him, and nothing happened. So he got more and more scared. He's like, what do I do with this kid? You know, I can't talk him out of it, and I can't punish him out of it, and I can't even kill him. So then the teacher said to him, you know, look, he's just a little boy. He'll forget about all this stuff. Send him back to school. Now, Prahlad at this time has become very emboldened, because before he was just doing his Krishna consciousness himself. The only time he talked about his Krishna consciousness was specifically when his father asked him. But now he sees, hey, you know, my father can't hurt me. So now when he goes back to school, what does he do?
I know.
He preaches, right? So as soon as the teachers leave the classroom, as soon as they walk out of the classroom, he starts preaching to all of his friends. And he tells all of his friends the story. First, he's telling them about how you're not this body, that Krishna's God, that there's a higher goal in life. And then the kids say, how do you know all this? And he said, well, I learned it from Narada Muni. It's interesting, he would never tell Sanda and Amarka Narada's name, nor would he tell his father Narada's name. But he told his friends. And his friends said, we've never seen you talk to Narada. You're always here. You don't go anywhere. And then he tells them how, well, his father was doing austerities, that his pregnant mother had stayed at Narada's ashram, and Narada was preaching to her, and she wasn't paying much attention. You know what it's like sometimes when you're listening to Shastra, but actually you're really worried about something else, you're really worried that you have a check that might bounce, or did you unplug the iron in your house, or, you know, your husband yelled at you this morning, or something, you know, get something on your mind that's going through your mind that you're worried about, and so you don't hear. Or it's like that sometimes in a kirtan, you know, you're sitting in a kirtan and you're just, what was the mantra we chanted? You're not present. So Dayadu, Prahlad's mother, was not really present. All she was thinking about is, when's my husband coming home? When's my husband coming home? When's my husband coming home? I want to wait to have this baby until my husband comes home. Right? So any of you who are mothers, you can understand that. You know, you don't want to have your baby while your husband's out of town. So that was her, and she really didn't listen to anything that Narada said. But the child in the womb heard Narada, and, you know, even today, there are children whose parents read to them from mathematics books or science books while they're in the womb. And the children, when they're 1 year old, can do advanced mathematical problems. So Prahlad was able to imbibe this spiritual instruction from within the womb. So he got all the children to become devotees. They were simple, and he got them all to become devotees. Well, that was it. You know, it was one thing for Prahlad to be in his father's face and say, worship Vishnu and be indestructible. But it was a little further when Prahlad started getting all the other demon children to worship Vishnu. So at this point, Hiranyakashipu just lost it. And he says to him, he said, how are you so fearless? How do you dare to defy my authority? And Prahlad says, well, my fearlessness, my power comes from the same source as yours. It comes from that of Vishnu. It comes from God. It's God. Oh, he's everywhere. Actually, it says that Prahlad actually saw Nrisingadev kind of peeking out from behind the pillar. And Hiranyakashipu says, is he in his pillar? Yeah. So he picks up his sword, and he didn't use his sword to hit the pillar. He picked up his sword and hit the pillar with his fist. And first there was just this sound. Now, people who've been in a tornado, they talk about a sound, like a roaring train. And people in an earthquake, they also talk about a great sound or a hurricane. So it was this kind of sound, and the sound was not only where the pillar was, but it was all over the universe, and everyone in every part of the universe thought, okay, it's finished. You know, this is it. This is the big earthquake. This is, you know, the end of the Mayan calendar, or whatever, you know, this is the end of the world. Everything's finished, you know. The big California earthquake that's going to put everybody in the Pacific. So they were all terrified, and Hirani Kashyapu was looking around, you know, where did that come from? He couldn't figure the source of the sound. So God as sound, of course Krishna says he's the sound in the ether and he's the sound of his name, but this was God as sound. And then the pillar splits and out comes this huge being who's as tall as a mountain. We were driving here, we saw some of the clouds. You know, so this, this being, his head is up in the clouds, he's so huge. And he has a lion face and a human body. And lion claws.
Did he break his roof?
Did he break his roof? I don't know. It might have been in a courtyard where they were fighting. I'm not sure if they were fighting inside. And he's got... He was very, very tall. He was as tall as a mountain. And he had his tongue was sticking out and moving back and forth like a sword. And he had many, many arms. And with his arms, he was killing the various demon soldiers with all of his weapons. And his eyes, he had yellow eyes, like a cat has yellow eyes. He had eyes like gold.
How would he fit in the doorway then?
Beautiful mane. Probably, they were probably outside. They're probably in some kind of a courtyard.
And how did the Mars get in the doorway?
Well, there was a doorway from the courtyard to go inside. So then Hiranyakashipu sees this great being and he just thinks, well, that's interesting. Yeah, because, you see, Hiranyakashipu had this mentality that he was indestructible. So he's just like, oh, okay. What is that? Who is that? I bet you it's Vishnu. And he's made some plan to kill me, but you know, nobody can kill me. So at this point, Lord Nrisimhadev manifests an effulgence that was so bright that everything else became invisible. You couldn't even see Hiranyakashipu anymore. He had no more influence. And the Lord picks him up along with his club, just holds him and then drops him. Just like cats do, because he was cat. You know, so that's what cats do. They play. And Hiranyakashipu says, oh, just see. He's afraid of me. Right? And he sat down, rested for a while.
Okay.
You know, Nrisimhadev, with the view of the laws of combat, he's not going to attack Hiranyakashipu as long as he's not attacking him back. So finally, Hiranyakashipu picks up his sword, and then he's, with his mystic power, he's going from the sky to the land. But he kept his eyes closed because he was very, and this is the verse we're going to focus on, because he was very disturbed by the laughter of Lord Nrisimhadev, who kept laughing and laughing and laughing. And finally, Nrisimhadev picks him up, and he sits down in the doorway, and very easily with the end of his nails, rips him apart, pulls out his intestines, wears it as a victory garland, pulls out Hiranyakashipu's heart, throws it away, and then...
Some surgeon.
Then he stands up, and when he stands off, he just brushes Hiranyakashipu off, and then he starts killing all the demon soldiers. And even after he's killed all the demon soldiers, he's still furious. So if you ever think of a time when you've been really, really, really angry, and even after you've expressed your anger, you're still angry, that it just takes a long time to cool down. So you can think of that? So Hiranyakashipu was Nrisimhadev was extremely angry. There's one wonderful lecture where Srila Prabhupada talks about how Nrisimhadev's anger naturally melted upon seeing Prahlad. That all the demigods tried to offer prayers. It's interesting, their prayers are mostly self-serving, if you read through their prayers. They mostly said, Hiranyakashipu was giving us so much trouble, and now you've gotten rid of him, thank you. So it was very much on, you know, gratitude is a whole lot better than not being grateful. But it's not the ultimate love, because gratitude is still very me-centered. I'm thankful for what you've done for me. I'm thankful for what you've done for me. One nice essay where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati talks about that the ultimate love is far beyond, it includes, of course, gratitude. We're not opposed to gratitude, but it's beyond that. So their prayers were very self-centered, and Nrisimhadev was furious. And even Lakshmi didn't want to go near him. But as soon as he saw Prahlad, and Prabhupada said the same way that any of us, if we see some small, innocent child, our heart naturally melts. It's natural. Yeah. And he said the same way that Nisingadeva's heart melted. And when I was hearing this lecture the other day, so about a month or so ago, I was really meditating on how what we are trying to do is we are trying to melt the Lord's heart. It's really what we're trying to do. Our chanting, our service, our hearing. We want the Lord's heart to melt for us in affection. It's not really a mechanical thing. And then, of course, Prahlada is offering many beautiful prayers to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada really liked these prayers. And then Nisingadeva says, I really want to give you something. And Prahlada said, wait a minute, that's not why I'm worshiping you. This is not a business deal. And Nisingadeva said, that's all right, but I want to give you something. He said, it's my pastime to give benedictions. And Prahlada Maharaj says, okay, make it then in my heart I only want to serve you. That's my benediction. Don't give me any material desires in my heart. So that's not really a benediction in a sense, right? I just want to love you. I don't want anything. Please, please take something. Okay, give me the benediction that I'll always love you. Because that was the benediction he asked for. And then Nisingadeva said, all right, you don't want anything, but I want you to have something. I want you to be the king of the demons. I want you to rule the demons in the place of your father. And then he kept pressuring Prahlada. He said, please ask for something. He said, all right. He said, my father was very angry at you and did horrible things to me. Please forgive him. Please liberate him. And Nisingadeva said, yes, he's already liberated. In fact, so many generations are liberated. And then Nisingadeva turns to Brahma and says, what does he say to
Don't
Brahma?
Don't give demons benedictions.
Don't give these sort of benedictions to the demons. So here you see also how Krishna manages things. He's a very expert. Krishna could give the best seminars on management science. So one of them is, if a middle manager says something, the top manager should back them up to the customer. Right? If you go into a shop and the cashier says we're having a sale, but actually the sale ended yesterday, then the store should honor that and give you the item at the sale price. Right? I just had the opposite happen. I just had this bank send us a form to fill out, and after we filled it out, they said, you filled out the wrong form. I said, but that's the form your people gave us to fill out. They said, sorry. They gave you the wrong form. Although it was actually identical to the form they wanted us to fill out. The only difference was that signatures were on the right side instead of on the left side. But they didn't honor what their subordinate had done. So Krishna honors what his subordinates have done, but he chews them out privately. So to Hiranyakashipu, he honored Brahma's promise, although he didn't need to. Right? He kills Hiranyakashipu in the doorway, so it's not inside or outside. It's evening, so it's not day or night. With his nails, which are not living or unliving, he's not a created being. He took a form of an animal man, so he was neither an animal nor a man. But with some other ones, it was on his lap, wasn't in the air, sea or sky. So why did he honor Brahma's promises? Because that's what Krishna does. He honors the promises of his devotees and his employees. The demigods are all his employees, and he honors their promises. So people can know that I can trust somebody who's a devotee of Krishna. But then privately he says to Prahlada, don't do this. Don't give demons these kind of benedictions that are just going to be troubling for the whole universe. And then he leaves and Prahlada is crowned king of the demons. So there's so many instructive things in this. I think Prahlada Maharaj's example of what is forgiveness is very instructive. That Prahlada doesn't say, oh, my father didn't do anything. But he says, I don't want him to suffer. I want to look just briefly, we just have about 5 minutes. I want to look just briefly at one verse, which is 7.8.28. Tamsnena vegam sata chandra vartmabis charantam achidram uparadyado hari kritva tahasam karam utsvanolbanam nimilitaksham jagrahe mahajwala. Making a loud, shrill sound of laughter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, who is extremely strong and powerful, captured Hiranyakashipu, who was protecting himself with his sword and shield, leaving no gaps open. With the speed of a hawk, Hiranyakashipu moves sometimes in the sky and sometimes on the earth, his eyes closed because of fear of Nisingadeva's laughter. So if we go to the third canto, and somehow I didn't write down which verse it is, if we go to the third canto, where Lord Kapiladeva is telling us how to meditate on the Lord, and he's giving a description, meditate on the Lord's lotus feet and his knees and his thighs and his navel and so forth. He also says, with devotion steeped in love and affection, the yogi should meditate within the core of his heart upon the laughter of Lord Vishnu. The laughter of Vishnu is so captivating that it can be easily meditated upon. When the Supreme Lord is laughing, one can see his small teeth, which resemble jasmine buds rendered rosy by the splendor of his lips. Once devoting his mind to this, the yogi should no longer desire to see anything else. Prabhupada's purport on that verse. It is recommended that the yogi visualize the laughter of the Lord after studying his smile very carefully. These particular descriptions of meditation on the smile, laughter, face, lips, and teeth all indicate conclusively that God is not impersonal. It is described herein that one should meditate on the laughter or smiling of Vishnu. There is no other activity that can completely cleanse the heart of the devotee. The exceptional beauty of the laughter of Lord Vishnu is that when he smiles, his small teeth, which resemble the buds of jasmine flowers, at once become reddish, reflecting his rosy lips. If the yogi is able to place the beautiful face of the Lord in the core of his heart, he will be completely satisfied. In other words, when one is absorbed in seeing the beauty of the Lord within himself, the material attraction can no longer disturb him. So this is the essence of our whole spiritual process. Right there, this one line. When one is absorbed in seeing the beauty of the Lord within himself, the material attraction can no longer disturb him. So all of our problems, all of our sufferings, everything we want, everything we can't have, all of our frustrations, all of our anxieties, all of our fears, which are all due to material attraction and material attachment, can all be finished if we meditate on the Lord. And the Lord is laughing in every incarnation. In this incarnation as a Singhadev, he doesn't have very small teeth. He's got big teeth. But if you see the deity of Nisingadev in Mayapur, as talking to one of the long-term residents there, and she said, oh, I don't see that he's fearsome, I see that he's laughing. And if you look carefully at him, you'll see that he actually is laughing. And, by the way, why is Nisingadev laughing? Because he's having fun. He's having fun. This for him is lila, it's krida, it's sport. He doesn't need to have this whole battle scene with Hiranyakashipu. He could have kept Brahma's promises intact without even personally appearing. That's not required. He's clever enough to do that. And he could just personally appear and pick him up and kill him with his nails in 2 seconds. He doesn't have to have this whole battle thing and the noise and the pillars splitting and the, you know. But it's fun. It's fun. And just like we have fun sometimes in a fight, right? If we don't have physical fights with people, we have some fun sometimes having a repartee. That's also enjoyable. So the Lord also has this enjoyment. So he's laughing. And in each of his incarnations, we can see that he's laughing. Krishna, of course, is always laughing and joking. Hasya pari hasya sambhasana. So they're laughing and joking, talking with one another. Krishna's always joking with the gopis, with the cowherd boys. They stick a flower in his mouth, telling him it's a sweet ball. Right? Even Ramchandra, who's very grave and dharmic, he's also so much enjoying in the forest with Sita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada said, only joked once with his wife. He said that his mother was looking for something, and he said, oh, maybe your daughter-in-law has it. Prabhupada said that was the only time he ever joked with his wife. But as a sannyasi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was certainly always joking. He was also, as a young boy, joking with the young girls.
Was that with Lakshmi Devi?
I'm not sure. I have to look that up. I don't know if Prabhupada says which wife. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always pulling jokes on the young girls of Nadi, on the brahmanas, right, on his friends, on his parents. One of my favorite pastimes is when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is given some prasadam to eat early in the morning. And when he eats it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just laughing and laughing and laughing. Or when the devotees are eating the pilu fruits from Vrindavan, and those who don't know, they start chewing the seeds, and it starts burning their mouth, and the Lord and all of his associates are laughing in their water sports. And so if we look at of all of Krishna's incarnations, it's always play. It's always fun. And if we meditate on this laughter of the Lord, on this fun of the Lord, then there's nothing that we're going to be interested in this world. Or rather, we will then see the things in this world in relationship to Krishna. We will no longer have any interest in enjoying them. And then this world will also become a very happy place because we'll see it as part of Krishna's energy. So there's so much in this pastime, a lot more than we can discuss in half an hour. Of course, Nrisimhadev is usually the Lord prayed to for protection. Even Mother Yasoda prays to Lord Nrisimhadev for protection. Right? And it's described by, I think, Sanatana Goswami, that when Krishna's going out to in the forest, that Yasoda says, if any demons come, you please pray. No, it's Rupa Goswami. If any demons come, you please pray to Lord Narayan. And so Krishna's having to suppress a smile. And Rupa Goswami says, may that suppressed smile of the Lord give you all auspiciousness. And also when he goes out in the forest, he ties on a Nrisingha kavacha on his wrist and says, Lord Nrisimhadev will protect you against the demons. So even in Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan are feeling, if you want protection, ask the Lord as Nrisimhadev. So he particularly likes to, this is the form that the Lord takes when he's protecting his devotees. You know, our form changes somewhat according to our mood. My face may get red, or if I'm tired. I mean, my form may look quite different. If you take a photograph of a person at different moods, it can look very different. You can look 10 years older if you're just like, right? Or if you're smiling, you can look 10 years younger. So the Lord also, according to his mood, he manifests different forms. So this is his mood of really protecting the devotees, vanquishing the evildoers. So thank you very much. That was 33 minutes.
Okay. What was that third canto reference?
I somehow when I put this, you can have the verse, but I forgot to include the verse number.
I had a question for you.
Yes, Karika.
Here's a question. You asked about why Hiranyakashipu was closing his eyes.
Oh. Why is he closing his eyes instead of plugging his ears?
I have always wondered about that. But I think he probably couldn't plug his ears because in one hand he had a sword and in one hand he had a shield. So, and he was jumping because he was in the middle of fighting. So he's holding the sword in one hand and the shield in the other hand and he's jumping from the land to the sky and he's having to use mystic powers. And when you have to use mystic powers, you have to kind of concentrate so that you can call up your mystic powers. So he didn't have any hands, but he didn't want to hear the laughter. So he didn't want to hear the laughter. He couldn't plug his ears. He was just kind of squeezing his eyes shut, hoping he could get away from the laughter that way.
He couldn't see him laughing when he was trying to hit.
Yeah, well, that made it a little difficult because he was trying to fight with his eyes closed. Yeah. Yes.
Remember, Sumudev says that he's lost father is already liberated.
Yes.
He was liberated anyway because he's actually one of the guards, right?
Oh, well, that's a good point. Was he liberated anyway because he was one of the guards? So yes, you could say that even from the point of Hiranyakashipu, he's engaging in this as one way of just reciprocating with Krishna, although he's doing other things as well. Although it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that this pastime of Nrisimhadev occurs over and over again in different universes and different millenniums. Of course, a little differently. It's not that it always occurs exactly the same way. But that the other times it occurs, the demons are actually demons. That in one time, these demons were Jai and Vijay, and every other time they were actually demons. Yes, Chuck.
I thought Jai and Vijay had to take 3 births.
Yes, they did. So what you say, how could they be liberated? You know, there's a reference for that, and I can't remember the details of it. But in each case, they were liberated from something. And I can't remember what it was. I'd have to look at that couple.
Hey.